We're continuing chapter 12 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And they're all heading out to Hogsmeade now. The walk into Hogsmeade was not enjoyable. Harry wrapped his scarf over his lower face. The exposed part soon felt both raw and numb. The road to the village was full of students bent double against the wind. More than once, Harry wondered whether they might not have had a better time in the warm common room. And when they finally reached Hogsmeade and saw that Zonko's joke shop had been boarded up, Harry took it as confirmation that this trip was not destined to be fun. Ron pointed with a thickly gloved hand toward Honeydukes, which was mercifully opened, and Harry and Hermione staggered in his wake into the crowded shop. Thank God, shivered Ron, as they were enveloped by the warm, toffee-scented air. Let's stay here all afternoon. Harry, my boy, said a booming voice behind them. Oh, no, muttered Harry. The three of them turned to see Professor Slughorn, who was wearing an enormous furry hat and an overcoat with a matching fur collar, clutching a large bag of crystallized pineapple and occupying at least a quarter of the shop. Harry, that's three of my little suppers you've missed now, said Slughorn, poking him genially in the chest. It won't do, my boy. I'm determined to have you. Miss Granger loves them, don't you? Yes, said Hermione helplessly. They're really... So why don't you come along, Harry? Demanded Slughorn. Well, I've had Quidditch practice, Professor, said Harry, who had indeed been scheduling practices every time Slughorn had sent him a little violet, ribbon-adorned invitation. This strategy meant that Ron was not left out, and they usually had a laugh with Ginny, imagining Hermione shut up with McGlaggen and Zabini. Well, I certainly expect you to win your first match after all this hard work, said Slughorn. But a little recreation never hurt anybody. Now, how about Monday night? You can't possibly want to practice in this weather. I can't, Professor. I've got an appointment with Professor Dumbledore that evening. Unlucky again, cried Slughorn dramatically. Ah, well, you can't evade me forever, Harry. And, with a regal wave, he waddled out of the shop, taking as little notice of Ron as though he had been a display of cockroach clusters. I can't believe you've wriggled out of another one, said Hermione, shaking her head. They're not that bad, you know. They're even quite fun sometimes. But then she caught sight of Ron's expression. Oh, look, they've got deluxe sugar quills. Those will last hours. Glad that Hermione had changed the subject, Harry showed much more interest in the extra-large sugar quills than he normally would have. But Ron continued to look moody and merely shrugged when Hermione asked him where he wanted to go next. Let's go to the Three Broomsticks, said Harry. It'll be warm. They bundled their scarves back over their faces and left the sweet shop. The bitter wind was like knives on their faces after the sugary warmth of Honeydukes. The street was not very busy. Nobody was lingering to chat, just hurrying toward their destinations. The exceptions were two men a little ahead of them standing just outside the Three Broomsticks. One was very tall and thin, squinting through his rain-washed glasses. Harry recognized the barman who worked in the other Hogsmeade pub, the Hogshead. As Harry, Ron, and Hermione drew closer, the barman drew his cloak more tightly around his neck and walked away, leaving the shorter man to fumble with something in his arms. They were barely feet from him when Harry realized who the man was. Mundungus! The squat, bandy-legged man with long, straggly ginger hair jumped and dropped an ancient suitcase, which burst open, releasing what looked like the entire contents of a junk shop window. Oh, hello, Harry, said Mundungus Fletcher, with the most unconvincing stab at airiness. Well, don't let me keep you. And he began scrabbling on the ground to retrieve the contents of his suitcase, with every appearance of a man eager to be gone. Are you selling this stuff? Asked Harry, watching Mundungus grab an assortment of grubby-looking objects from the ground. Oh, well, gotta scrape a living, said Mundungus. Give me that. But Ron had stooped down and picked up something silver. Hang on, said Ron slowly. This looks familiar. Thank you, said Mundungus, snatching the goblet out of Ron's hand and stuffing it back in the case. Well, I'll see y'all. Ouch! Harry had pinned Mundungus against the wall of the pub by the throat. Holding him fast with one hand, he pulled out a wand. Harry, squealed Hermione. You took that from Sirius's house, said Harry, who was almost nose to nose with the Mundungus, and was breathing in an unpleasant smell of old tobacco and spirits. That had the Black family crest on it. What? Spluttered Mundungus, who was slowly turning purple. What did you do, go back the night he died and strip the place? Said snarled Harry. Give it to me. Harry, you mustn't, shrieked Hermione as Mundungus started to turn blue. There was a bang, and Harry felt his hands fly off Mundungus' throat. Gasping and spluttering, Mundungus seized his fawn case, and then, crack, he disapparated. Harry swore at the top of his voice, spinning on the spot to see where Mundungus had gone. Come back, you thieving! There's no point, Harry. Tonks had appeared out of nowhere, her mousy hair wet with sleet. Mundungus will probably be in London by now. There's no point in yelling. But he nicked Sirius's stuff. Nicked it! Yes, but still, said Tonks, who seemed perfectly untroubled by this piece of information. You should get out of the cold. She watched them go through the door of the three broomsticks. The moment he was inside, Harry burst out. He was nicking Sirius's stuff. I know, Harry, but please don't shout. People are staring, whispered Hermione. Go and sit down. I'll get you a drink. Harry was still fuming when Hermione returned to their table a few minutes later, holding three bottles of butterbeer. Can't the order control Mundungus? Harry demanded of the other two in a furious whisper. Can't they at least stop him from stealing everything that's not fixed down and he's at Hagrid headquarters? Shh, said Hermione desperately, looking around to make sure nobody was listening. There were a couple of warlocks sitting close by who were staring at Harry with great interest, and Zabini was lolling against a pillar not too far away. Harry, I'd be annoyed too. I know it's your things he's stealing. Harry gagged on his butterbeer. He had momentarily forgotten that he owned number 12 Grimmauld Place. Yeah, it's my stuff, he said. No wonder he wasn't pleased to see me. Well, I'm going to tell Dumbledore what's going on. He's the only one who scares Mundungus. Good idea, whispered Hermione, clearly pleased that Harry was calming down. Ron, what are you staring at? Nothing, said Ron, hastily looking away from the bar, but Harry knew he was trying to catch the eye of the curvy and attractive barmaid, Madame Rosmerta, for whom he had long nursed a soft spot. I expect nothing's in the back getting more fire whiskey, said Hermione waspishly. Ron ignored this jibe, sipping his drink in what he evidently considered to be a dignified silence. Harry was thinking about Sirius and how he hated those silver goblets anyways. Hermione drummed her fingers on the table, her eyes flickering between Ron and the bar. The moment Harry drained the last drops in his bottle, she said, "Shall we call it a day and go back to school then?" The other two nodded. It had not been a fun trip, and the weather was getting worse the longer they stayed. Once again, they drew their cloaks tightly around them, rearranged their scarves, pulled on their gloves, and followed Katie Bell and a friend out of the pub and back up the high street. Harry's thoughts strayed to Ginny as they trudged up the road to Hogwarts through the frozen slush. They had not met up with her, undoubtedly, thought Harry, because she and Dean were cozily closeted in Madame Puttyfoot's tea shop, that haunt of happy couples. Scowling, he bowed his head against the swirling sleet and trudged on. It was a little while before Harry became aware that the voices of Katie Bell and her friend, which were being carried back to him on the wind, had become shriller and louder. Harry squinted at their indistinct figures. The two girls were having an argument about something Katie was holding in her hand. "It's nothing to do with you, Leanne," Harry heard Katie say. They rounded a corner in the lane, sleet coming thick and fast, blurring Harry's glasses. Just when he raised the gloved hand to wipe them, Leanne made to grab hold of the package Katie was holding. Katie tugged it back, and the package fell to the ground. At once, Katie rose into the air, not as Ron had done, suspended comically by the ankles, but gracefully, her arms outstretched as though she was about to fly. Yet there was something wrong, something eerie. Her hair was whipped around her by the fierce wind, but her eyes were closed, and her face was quite empty of expression. Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Leanne had all halted in their tracks, watching. Then, 6 feet above the ground, Katie let out a terrible scream. Her eyes flew open, but whatever she could see, or whatever she was feeling, was clearly causing her terrible anguish. She screamed and screamed. Leanne started to scream too and seized Katie's ankles, trying to tug her back to the ground. Ron and Hermione rushed forward to help, but even as they grabbed Katie's ankles, she fell on top of them. Harry and Ron managed to catch her, but she was writhing so much they could hardly hold her. Instead, they lowered her to the ground where she thrashed and screamed, apparently unable to recognize any of them. Harry looked around. The landscape seemed deserted. "Stay there," he shouted at the others over the howling wind. "I'm going for help." He began to sprint toward the school. He had never seen anyone behave as Katie had just behaved, and could not think what had caused it. He hurled around a bend in the lane and collided with what seemed to be an enormous bear on its hind legs. "Hagrid," he panted, disentangling himself from the hedgerow into which he had fallen. "Harry," said Hagrid, who had sleep trapped in his eyebrows and beard, and was wearing his great shaggy beaver-skin coat. "Just been visiting Grop. He's coming around so well you wouldn't..." "Hagrid, someone's hurt back there, or cursed or something." "What?" said Hagrid, bending lower to hear what Harry was saying over the raging wind. "Someone's been cursed," bellowed Harry. "Cursed? Who been cursed? Not Ron, Hermione?" "No, it's not them. It's Katie Bell. This way." Together, they ran back along the lane. It took no time to find the little group of people around Katie, who was still writhing and screaming on the ground. Ron, Hermione, and Leanne were all trying to quiet her. "Get back," shouted Hagrid. "Let me see her." "Something's happened to her," sobbed Leanne. "I don't know what." Hagrid stared at Katie for a second, then without a word bent down and scooped her in his arms and ran off toward the castle. Within seconds, Katie's piercing screams had died away, and the only sound was the roar of the wind. Hermione hurried over to Katie's wailing friend and put an arm around her. "It's Leanne, isn't it?" The girl nodded. "Did it just happen all of a sudden, or..." "It was when that package tore," sobbed Leanne, pointing at the now sodden brown paper package on the ground, which had split open to reveal greenish glitter. Ron bent down, his hand outstretched, but Harry seized his arm and pulled him back. "Don't touch it." He crouched down. An ornate opal necklace was visible, poking out of the paper. "I've seen that before," said Harry, staring at the thing. "It was on display in Borgin and Burke's ages ago. The label said it was cursed. Katie must have touched it." He looked up at Leanne, who had started to shake uncontrollably. "How did Katie get a hold of this?" "Well, that's why we were arguing. She came back from the bathroom with the three broomsticks holding it, said it was a surprise for someone at Hogwarts, and she had to deliver it. She looked all funny when she said it. Oh, no. I bet she'd been imperious, and I didn't realize it." Leanne shook with renewed sobs. Hermione patted her shoulder gently. "She didn't say who'd given it to her, Leanne?" "No, she wouldn't tell me, and I said she was being stupid and not to take it up to school, but she wouldn't listen, and I tried to grab it from her, and Leanne let out a wail of despair. "Well, we better get up to school," said Hermione, her arms still around Leanne. "We'll be able to find out how she is. Come on." Harry hesitated for a moment, and then pulled his scarf around his face, ignoring Ron's gasp, carefully covered the necklace in it, and picked it up. "We'll need to show this to Madame Pomfrey," he said. And they followed Hermione and Leanne up the road.
"Can't they levitate stuff? Why doesn't he just levitate it?"
I'm not sure if it would be dangerous to use his magic on it, if it's cursed. Okay. Should we stop, or do you want to continue?
You sound tired, so let's stop.
Okay, I'm kind of sleepy. I love you so much, my beautiful girl.
I love you so much, too.
Sweet dreams, darling. The warrior kitten.
My little.
Sleep well, boo. I love you.
I love you.
Good night.